following is a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's GNCAST.com.
It's Thursday, October 13th, 2016. Welcome to the Alien Invasion number 197, a Galactic Network podcast. I'm Dave Nelson along with Brad Ludwig and Anessa Moyens. Hello.
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 How are you guys?
Doing all right.
Superb.
It's been a couple of weeks.
It has.
Yeah. What's up with that?
Life gets in the way.
Yeah,
things happen.
Things happen. Yeah.
You know what?
What's that?
We've saved up all that energy. We're going to put it in this show.
Yeah, damn it.
I'm scared.
All right. Thank you to Monkey Warhol for providing our intro music. The song is called Alien Syndrome. You can find it at soundcloud.com/Monkey Warhol. This is the show where we talk about beings from elsewhere in the universe and their appearances in film, TV, video games, comic book, science, and in real life. Before we get into the news, I have a question for you guys.
Yes.
If you were walking through the woods, came to a clearing, saw what looked like an alien craft, not of this earth, what would you do? Would you A, run away?
Run away!
B, stay where you are and observe the situation? Or C, walk toward the craft to investigate it further?
Or D, live stream that stuff on Facebook?
Of course.
And the YouTubes.
Well, you could do that with either of those
choices. Walking toward the craft to investigate.
Yeah, any of those choices, you could be doing a Facebook Live.
Am I wearing pants?
I'm not going to Facebook Live me running away from the scene. Otherwise, it's just going to look like the Blair Witch Project.
Yeah, that's true.
You're not wrong.
You could Facebook Live B and C.
You could. I mean, technically, you could A, but yeah. I mean, I got a Facebook Live my retreat. Show everybody what a coward I am.
So, Bradley Ludwig, what's your answer?
Yes. I want to hear the question one more time.
Okay. You're walking through the woods. You and one of your pet cats. You're on your catwalk.
Furlong. On the catwalk.
Yes. So you came to a clearing.
I'm gonna do a little turn in the woods on my catwalk.
You saw a craft, not of this earth. What do? You run away, you stay where you are, observe the situation, or C, walk toward the craft to investigate it better.
I would first crouch down and hide and take pictures.
Okay.
And assess the situation and go from there.
Okay, so you can't make a decision right away. You got to wait to see how things pan out and then go from there.
Well, I mean, I suppose if you go charging forward and like this alien comes out and
you had your turn.
I'm just trying to explain to Dave your logic here. You want to wait and see if they're going to come out shooting or eating little bunny rabbits or something.
You got to see the look of them. What do they look like?
Yeah. Are they wearing pants? Am I wearing pants? No, quite honestly, if you're in such a weird situation where, I mean, that's, you know what I'm saying? That's unprecedented. You don't get a chance like that. You would have to gather evidence. You'd have to take pictures and try to hold still so your pictures didn't look like crap.
If there's one thing we've learned from this podcast, it's you have to take good pictures.
Yeah, shaky pictures not going to further the cause of discovering alien life.
Okay, Anessa, what's your answer?
Brad said I had my chance.
I thought you answered first.
No, I asked Brad first.
I definitely would take pictures, and I would try to get a better view of the craft. So
by walking,
I would probably end up walking towards it at least to some degree to get a better look.
Kind of walking towards it, not really. Sort of.
Kind of walking towards it, but no, I would walk towards the craft to get a better look.
Okay.
Live stream that stuff on Facebook.
In the news.
Have I got a story for you? I saw this today when I was checking out Facebook, and it's a little sad in a way. And also fitting in our current climate that we have here in the United States. Brian Cox explains why he thinks we'll never find aliens. Now, in 1950, Enrico Fermi theorized that even using primitive rocket technology, it would only take extraterrestrials about 10 million years to colonize the Milky Way. Given the galaxy is about 10,000 million years old, we should have already detected alien signals, Fermi said, sparking a debate that has fascinated scientists ever since. Now, according to the Sunday Times, this story comes to us from the HuffPo in the UK. So, according to the Sunday Times, Brian Cox believes that any alien civilization is destined to wipe itself out shortly after it evolves.
That's so sad.
What a gloomy
Gus.
It is
a bit. One solution, and this is a quote from Cox, one solution to the Fermi paradox is that it is not possible to run a world that has the power to destroy itself and that needs global collaborative solutions to prevent that. The physicist explained that advances in science and technology would rapidly outstrip the development of institutions capable of keeping them under control, leading to the civilization's self-destruction. It may be that the growth of science and engineering inevitably outstrips the development of political expertise, leading to disaster. We could be approaching that position. And he's not wrong.
Nope. It could be happening sooner than we thought.
Yeah. What does a scientist want to be, asked Cox. Do we want to be right? Or do we care about understanding nature? If it is the latter, we should be delighted to be proven wrong. Again, he's not wrong. So, yeah, it's a little bittersweet. We haven't discovered alien life because, according to Brian Cox's theory, once you get the know-how to make things happen, you've probably developed enough other technologies to wipe out everybody else on the planet. And you don't really get much further than that.
Yeah.
I am holding out hope, though, that there's one utopian society out there somewhere in the universe. I mean, there's got to be. With how big the universe is, there's got to be one species that made it, man. They against all odds, they powered through all of the crap, all of their versions of Donald Trump, and they... All their versions of Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un. And
yeah.
They made it.
It's not looking good. Not looking good.
So, okay. Do you guys agree with Brian Cox on this?
It, like he says, it's a great solution to Fermi's paradox. You know, we've... When you look at this and how... I just saw a story today that there may be 20 times the number of galaxies than originally thought. In other words, the universe is bigger than we thought it was. So that even increases the odds that there's going to be other life out there. Of course, we're, you know, the universe is huge, which is a vast understatement. The likelihood that we're going to run into other life is pretty remote, and throwing this little nugget of kind of what we're seeing happening right now, it makes sense. It makes sense.
It's a double-edged sword, I was just thinking, because, yeah. Number one, the universe is so vast that the possibility of a species getting far, you know, surviving to make it out into the stars is pretty good. But then at the same time, the universe is so large that what are the chances of them finding us or us finding them?
Yeah. No, exactly. So There you go.
Man, things are not going well, are they?
No, not really.
Not so much.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Follow this Galactic Network podcast on Twitter, like our Facebook page, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. Find us by searching for Galactic Netcasts on all the major social networks or click on the icons at gncast.com.
Let's bring the mood up and the atmosphere here in this.
Oh, hey, let's talk about politics.
Yay!
That'll do it.
Oh, boy, that'll help.
That's such a happy topic these days.
Anessa, what do you have?
Something politically related.
Yay.
So Nick Pope, who investigated the UFO phenomena for the UK Ministry of Defense, or MOD, in the 1990s, and now gives talks at conferences across the globe, wants to capitalize on the recent WikiLeaks email disclosures, which again placed Hillary Clinton and her campaign manager, John Podesta, at the forefront of the mysterious subject. The mysterious subject being aliens. Emails of Mr. Podesta's, made public by WikiLeaks, shows he had been in contact with the late former astronaut Edgar Mitchell, a key believer that aliens visit Earth, and former Blink-182 frontman Tom DeLonge, now a UFO researcher, over the subject. Now, Mr. Pope is trying to ensure the opportunity for the topic to fly during the final debate in the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, next Wednesday is not missed. Mr. Pope has written a number of tweets on the issue, hoping it will catch the eye of the debate host. He tweeted, "If Chris Wallace at Fox News Sunday asks about UFOs in the third presidential debate, it'll be the ultimate curveball question. Hashtag ask about UFOs." This followed an earlier one saying, "The latest WikiLeaks revelations made a question on UFOs a genuine possibility at the final presidential debate. An intriguing prospect." And before that, "I hope Mr. Trump won't use the hashtag Podesta emails to smear Hillary as a UFO nut. Curiosity reflects public interest and commitment to open government. Mr. Pope said express.co.uk, I hope it generates a lot of interest. Given the recent WikiLeaks revelations and the persistent rumors of cover-ups and conspiracies, I think it's time to clear the air and get the subject into the open. Also, given the toxicity of the campaign and the aggression in the second debate, a question on UFOs wouldn't just be interesting, it would be fun. And I think that's what U.S. politics needs right now. Mr. Pope is hopeful the subject will come up, particularly as the debate is being held in Las Vegas, not far from the infamous Area 51, top secret, not so secret, U.S. Air Force base in the Nevada desert, which has been linked to aliens by conspiracy theories." He added, "This is already the weirdest U.S. election in history, so nothing would surprise me. The fact that the WikiLeaks document dumps contain emails about UFOs has generated significant mainstream media coverage, and the moderator will want to ask questions that reflect what everyone's talking about. If the moderator doesn't ask about it, Trump may bring it up himself. He's so far behind in the polls and so rocked by scandal that he needs a nuclear option. Maybe he'll try to paint Clinton as a conspiracy nut. And there's always the outside possibility that one of the candidates knows something about UFOs that would put the other one completely off their stride. The UFO community has lobbied for this for years. This may just be the moment in their moment in the sun. In January, Mrs. Clinton vowed to release as many classified UFO files as possible if she makes it into the White House. And Mr. Podesta said his biggest regret, while a senior aide to President Barack Obama, was not getting, quote, UFO disclosure."
We talked about that. We did. Yeah, back then. Well, let's hope that hashtag works. That would be very interesting. I mean, why not? This can't be any worse, right?
I mean, I guess it could, but... I don't think it would hurt much, if at all.
People don't care. As there's a lot of proof to that point right now going on in the election. People don't care one way or the other. So I don't think it would hurt them if that subject or that question was brought up.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, people have pretty much made up their minds who they're going to vote for at this point. And I don't think there's going to be a whole lot more people switching. I mean, it would be nice. And I guess nice depending on which way they switch too. But I don't know. The whole thing is just kind of frustrating. And yeah, I'm just going to leave it at that.
Okay. But, you know, to bring a subject like extraterrestrial life into it would maybe make it just a little bit more enjoyable. I mean, a little less dour, you know? Some positivity, perhaps?
Well, that would be a welcome change.
Yeah.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
If you like what you've heard on this Galactic Network podcast, please consider helping us out financially by going to gncast.com/support. On that page, you'll find links to our Patreon campaign where you can make a small recurring monthly pledge of as little as $1. Or click on our Amazon affiliate link, make a purchase, and we get a very small percentage from the sale. Again, go to gncast.com/support. And thank you for supporting the Galactic Network podcast.
Okay, final news story. Alien villain revealed for Arrow, Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, four-way crossover. And I'm looking forward to hearing Brad's take on this and his information that he has, given your comic book knowledge. The CW has confirmed that the Dominators will be the main villain of the four-night event, with the aliens vexing heroes across every Arrowverse show. The creatures are based on Invasion, a three-issue comic book limited series and crossover event published in the late 1988 and 1989 by DC Comics. In that story, the Dominators are, and you have to say it like that when you say it, the Dominators are portrayed as technologically advanced race with a major interest in the genetic potential of the human race, especially metahumans. Producer Mark Guggenheim told The Hollywood Reporter, we're using cutting-edge prosthetics and computer effects to achieve a feature film quality look, which is faithful to Invasion artist Todd McFarlane's interpretation of the characters. And I've seen those characters, and they look damn scary. I'm not going to lie.
I'm going to do a screen share here for our YouTubers, and you can see what the Dominators look like. They are, think of like an alien gray, except they are yellow. They have a lot of teeth. They have elf ears, and they've got a huge bald head, and they have red, like huge red circles on the forehead above the eyebrow. And they wear green robes.
Very snazzy clothes.
Yeah, they are. They're pretty creepy. Pretty creepy. And they're kind of like, to me, attitude wise, they're like Ferengi, except change business to science.
Oh, okay.
And there you go. They are ruthless. They are cutthroat, but they are all about science, obviously domination, and world conquest.
Now, I have a question, and I don't know how far you guys are on The Flash. Do you watch it this week?
No,
not yet. We will after this show, actually.
Okay, maybe I won't bring the subject up then, because there's something that one of the antagonists says that leads me to think that they're already laying the groundwork for this. Like, even now.
I really think that they've already started.
Yeah?
They have to. You're going to have a four-show crossover, one of the shows being... Oh, I was about to say another network. No, they switched over to CW. But they are... They've announced that Supergirl is in a different
universe.
For now.
Well, it doesn't... And I think it's the smart play, because one of the big issues that they have in the comics and one of the complaints that people have like about Justice League is, in a world with Superman, what real threats are there? How your other heroes aren't as important or as necessary. Mm. And when you've got a smaller... kind of a smaller universe to deal with when you're looking at a half an hour show. Once you have Supergirl and that in there, it becomes it hamstrings your writers and it makes it a crutch of, oh, well, we've created something really horrible. Bring in Supergirl. And I think keeping her and Superman in another universe is really the best way to go for the Arrowverse shows. So,
okay, that makes a lot of sense.
But anyways, you have to, in order to have a team up like that, where everybody's got something to do, no matter the power level or the skills that the heroes have, you got to lay a lot of groundwork with all these half an hour programs to make this happen. So
you mean hour?
I keep saying half an hour. Yeah.
Okay.
Shows. Well,
We knew what you meant.
Sorry.
So, do you remember or did you read this comic book special, this series back in the day?
The Dominators, they were a big part of Invasion, and that was their kickoff to really getting into the metagene. They are the ones that... there were superheroes, but DC was looking to expand their hero set, and they needed to have a smart way maybe an easy way to do it. And by doing that, it was using the gene bomb. And that's what caused the metagene to hit all these humans. It actually gave Maxwell Lord psychic abilities.
Hmm.
He was just a normal person, and he ends up getting psychic ability, low-level psychic abilities, but the ability to kind of push people to do things.
Do you think that they'll also do that on the Arrowverse shows? Or would that be too much like the Marvel universe with the whole Inhumans thing?
It really kind of depends on where Berlanti and... Kreisberg want to go, because as of right now, the only powered individuals that you have were near the reactor in Flash.
Yeah.
So if they're looking to kind of expand, maybe creating more shows or laying the groundwork to do other things, because quite honestly, Legends of Tomorrow, you would kind of need... we don't know of a whole lot of powered individuals. And quite honestly, the feel of Arrow first season almost seemed like nobody mentions any heroes. Nobody mentions the heroes of the past, but having a JSA, the Justice Society of America, that we're seeing in Legends of Tomorrow would be kind of a big historical deal. And people, I don't think, would have freaked out nearly as much having a masked vigilante in Arrow if heroes didn't exist in the past.
Yeah, I was wondering about that myself. But maybe it's been so long that people just kind of forgot.
Yeah. That's a possibility, but then, well, I'm armchair quarterbacking the writing, and that's kind of silly, but it just raises some questions in my mind. And again, I'm a uber comic book nerd, so the other thing that's happening too in Supergirl, the Did you see the first episode of Supergirl?
Yes, I did.
Okay. The being or the person that was in the pod, if you've read any of the announcements that they've made, this is Berlanti and the Supergirl writing team. That is Mon-El. And Mon-El, in the comics at least, is a Daxamite. And they are cousins, as it were, to Kryptonians. But they have an issue with lead. Lead poisoning will kill them. Kryptonite does nothing, but lead is a problem. Now, in the comics, well, depending at what point in time, the most recent incarnation of Mon-El, he was, this is in the 90s, he ended up dealing with the Dominators, and the Dominators had dropped these gene bombs and then started to kind of cultivate certain people with certain powers, power sets, like they grouped together people that had ice powers, and they grouped together people who had darkness powers, and they grouped people together, you see what I'm saying, to try to create a whole like genetic line of, you know, we could have a country of people who just deal with, have ice powers. They all have ice powers. What ended up happening is Mon-El got lead poisoning and he was slowly dying. And some of his last acts was to find planets for these people that would, that were habitable, but were also hospitable to their power set. And so he essentially starts colonizing parts of the galaxy with these individuals because the Dominators had kind of laid this groundwork. And Superman drops him in the Phantom Zone because they couldn't quite find a cure for lead poisoning. But the thought was they put him in the Phantom Zone. He doesn't age and he can stay there until they find a cure. Something happens and Mon-El stays in the Phantom Zone for 1,000 years and becomes a part of the Legion of Superheroes.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting. Yes. Okay.
And it was the 90s run of the Legion of Superheroes where the Dominators had taken over, and this is in the 30th century. The Dominators had kind of taken over subtly, politically, taken over the United Federation of Planets.
It's not Star Trek.
No, I'm sorry. It's the, now I can't remember. But basically, it's the UN, but for colonized worlds of sentient beings. And the Dominators end up owning pretty much everything. And the Legion of Superheroes end up fighting the Dominators.
Mm.
So okay. It was a really great run. It was a great run for that particular volume of Legion of Superheroes. It got canceled eventually, and that whole storyline was ditched. But
from what I understand, Invasion was the last thing that Todd McFarlane did for DC. He quit halfway through or something like that.
And then he ended up going over to Marvel and started his mega hit run with The Amazing Spider-Man. Or Spider-Man, sorry. Spider-Man.
All right, so I think we're all looking forward to Invasion!
Next time on Comic Book Talk.
No, that's good. I was hoping that would happen because it's nice to get caught up on all things DC and CW once in a while. It's cool.
It'll just be interesting, and I'm kind of thinking they might do a little bit of the Legion of Superheroes for, or at least laying the groundwork, because Legends of Tomorrow is going to need something to do. And if they're going to be focusing on the past with the Justice Society, it would be kind of interesting to see them dealing with the heroes of the future.
Yeah, that's good. So, that's a good point.
But we'll see.
There's no dates yet for the Fortnite crossover. At least I couldn't find the dates for the Fortnite crossover, but I think it's going to be in December, I believe. Like right before the winter break.
Cool.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Hello, I'm Gregor Sprague, and this is the Elts Nerds. Now, what are the Elts Nerds? Well, it's myself and Corey Scott, along with our producers, Beatmaster and Evan Rockde, as we talk about everything that is on our nerdy little heart, whether it be comic books, movies, TV shows, video games, cell phones, the moments that we're walking down the street and a person says hi. It doesn't matter. We talk about everything, and you can find it at eltsnerds.com.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black triangular, three-dimensional shape, huge, just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
We had a dome. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was almost circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
It's time for sightings segment, a report of somebody seeing an object in the sky, on the ground, over the water, whatever, that may or may not be an extraterrestrial craft. It looks like Brad has this week's sighting. What'd you bring us?
I do. Now, this is a sighting that I found on the MUFON website.
Brad, don't you mean MUFON?
Sorry. For you X-Files folk who absolutely love David Duchovny, you would say MUFON.
I love that so much.
Once again, Ness and I are in stereo. Okay, here we go. This is a Minnesota sighting. Minnesota witness encounters oblong-shaped UFO. And we're going to go with the synopsis of this sighting. On December 25th, hey, that would have been your birthday.
Yeah.
Onesimus.
What are you doing,
Brad? What are you doing? You
know, that would have been your birthday 3 years ago.
You don't.
At a 33rd?
You don't reveal a woman's age. Come on.
Okay. Hey, now that I've put
How old am I? 32nd. Okay. And I'm in my 32nd. I don't know.
In the 32nd year. Yeah,
okay. In the year of our Lord. Okay. At approximately 9 p.m., the witness, a former businesswoman, was driving home in Woodbury, Minnesota.
Hey, I have family there.
Excellent. She was headed north on Century Avenue when she noticed a dark object with strobe lights maneuvering above the golf course across the street from the condo building where she lived. The shape was hard to see due to darkness and obscuring trees. The witness stopped the car and watched, then proceeded very slowly forward. She was close to, Puloy?
Wait a second. Let me take a look. Where are we at here?
I would have no idea, so I'm not going to even try.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to pronounce that.
I'm going to go with
Pouliot Parkway.
I'm going to go with a French and go with Puloy.
Yeah, Puloy
Parkway. After, if you're from Minnesota and you're hearing this and we're pronouncing it like idiots, let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
That's how I feel aliens, in Wisconsin.
aliens@gncasts.com.
Yes. After a short time, the object came at her shining headlights. Oh, that took a turn. Which engulfed the car in light. There was darkness as it passed over her car. The witness jumped out and saw two lights about 10 to 12 feet apart, moving away from her at treetop level. The witness wrote, "So it must have disappeared because I did not see it go anywhere. This sudden disappearance suggests a possible time discontinuity in the account." Time discontinuity. There we go. In the account, or the object turned off its lights. Either it controlled time or it just flipped a switch. We're not sure. or it may have been suddenly lost from sight because it was at a low altitude and was occluded by the trees. Of the three listed here, I think the last two seem, well, hell, we're dealing with a UFO. They could have shot a beam at her and made her forget. Who knows? The witness stated she was left terrified and in shock. Yeah, I think I'd be a little freaked out, too. Not going to lie.
That sounds like a movie encounter right there.
It sounds like a good portion maybe towards the beginning, setting up a whole alien invasion, perhaps, type movie.
You mentioned something about the time of day. What was the word you used?
Approximately?
No. It was... She was in the... She was amongst the...
I say things all the time.
Starts with a D. Look back on the story. I'm trying to get you to say something here.
What, discontinuity?
No, it was...
Darkness?
Darkness. Hang on. Okay.
I don't know what just happened.
It's like, I didn't think it was darkness. I haven't heard that song in forever.
I hope that that little jokey joke doesn't take us getting taken down from YouTube.
It was short enough. I think it might be okay.
Well,
fingers crossed.
Well, we'll see. Anyways, there you go. If you're in Minnesota and you're near Puleo Parkway, beware of obscured oblong-shaped UFOs. They may shoot beams at you or flip a switch and just save some energy and disappear.
There's some time dilation there, wasn't there?
Possibly. Discontinuity.
Okay.
If you would like to chat with the hosts or other listeners of this Galactic Network podcast 24 hours a day, go to gncast.com/signup. We'll add you to our Slack team, so you'll have the ability to interact with us in real time. Again, go to gncast.com/signup.
This is the segment where we talk about things that we've enjoyed in our life related to extraterrestrials. And Anessa, looks like you have the first go.
I do. I think I mentioned this like a month or two or however many ago, but I finally got around to finishing Star-Lord. I guess it's a short story. It's about, I don't know, 80 pages long, maybe. And just think, it's like the Titanic, but in space.
Are they doing the whole thing at the bow?
Not quite.
In spacesuits?
But there's like, I don't want to ruin it.
Draw me like one of your alien girls, Jack.
Yes, not really.
No.
I've lost my train of thought.
I'm sorry, that's my fault.
It's okay. Jugga, 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 jugga. Okay, so I'm just going to read the description. It says, to some passengers, a maiden voyage was a pleasure cruise. To others, it meant hope for a new life. Only the captain knew of its danger. The Star-Lord waited, poised for her maiden voyage. The gigantic silvery spindle, still cradled in its scaffoldings, towered upwards against the artificial sky of Satellite Y. The Star-Lord was perfection of modern spacecraft, the creation of the Earth's most skilled designers and builders, the largest ship ever launched. Protected by every safety device the ingenuity of man had been able to contrive, she was a palace to glide among the stars. She was also doomed. After the fashion of the legendary Titanic. So, like I said, it's kind of like the Titanic in space. So you have this spacecraft called the Star-Lord, and there are approximately 1,500 people on board. And much like the Titanic, it's supposed to be this really great ship that can get you where you need to go quicker. And there is... They're traveling at, I don't know that it's necessarily light speed, but they're traveling really fast. And they have some concerns because traveling at this pace, they're not as familiar with some of the obstacles that they could encounter. And one of those being the theoretical Thakura ripples. It's like a ripple in space. Just think like turbulence is what I gathered, but in space.
Ripple in space. Space.
It didn't really seem to affect time, so I can't say time and space, but there's a ripple in the fabric of space, I suppose. Anyway, so like I don't want to get into too much detail, but you get the idea that it's kind of like the Titanic. You've got things that go wrong, and you've got these different characters. And overall, even though it was kind of predictable, I enjoyed it. Much like the Titanic, you've got like these characters that you just love to hate. So, but anyway, no, I recommend it. It's a short read. I actually have an app on my iPad where I found this, and now I can't think of the app, and I don't have it on my phone, so I'm sorry. I'm not that prepared. So,
but do you think people can find this pretty easily in places that they normally find stories in books?
I would think so. It's probably a part of like maybe a little compilation of stuff. You can find it on Amazon for $0. for Kindle anyway. But the hardcover is apparently like $19. So it's The Star-Lord written by Boyd Ellenby. And I'm not sure. It says that it was published in March 30th, 2011. So it's not that old. I would have guessed it was probably older, but you know, whatever.
Does somebody in this story play a mixtape?
No, but they do have a masquerade ball. So I'm sure there was a mix of music and you could pretend that it was on a mixtape.
Okay. I just had to make that joke.
So, yeah. But no, anyway, they're just trying to get to like an alien planet is their ultimate goal.
Is so there
that's
alien?
How it's alien related.
Okay, so there's no actual aliens in this.
Not really.
Okay, that's fine. I'm not gonna penalize you for not having actual aliens.
Not really, but they're trying to get to an alien planet.
Yeah, that's close enough.
Close. It's sci-fi.
Close enough.
People are bound to wanna read it.
Seems legit.
Yeah, no. Like I said, I liked it. It's not like the greatest story ever, and it is kind of predictable. But if you've got a little bit of time to kill, I'd recommend it. There are worse things that you could read.
Well, what a
that's a solid.
I give it 3 stars, Dave.
Well, no, let's do the rating. Flying saucers. How many? 3.
Oh, 3.
Okay. All right.
Sorry, I just went to stars because it was Star Lord.
Ah, I see.
Yeah. I had a hard time, like, I was trying to find the book, and I typed in Star-Lord, and then, of course, everything Guardians of the Galaxy-related popped up. I'm like, no, not that one.
Yep. The other one that
the other one that nobody knows about.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a vessel.
All right. Thank you, Anessa. Now, I have a question for you guys. Where are all the aliens?
Well, if we believe Brian Cox, they're all dead.
That's such a happy thought.
Oh, God.
There's your ray of sunshine.
Okay. So, no, that was the Where All the Aliens was the title. Title of this TEDx talk that I watched from Tim O'Brien. Tim O'Brien, he is a professor of astrophysics and an associate director of Jodrell Bank Center, the director of Jodrell Bank Center for Astrophysics at the University of Manchester. That's in England. Jolly
really?
Old England. Yes. You didn't pick up
I had
on
no
that?
Idea.
Okay.
No. Okay. I never would have guessed.
Okay. Smart.
So this is from the description of the video on YouTube. We now know of thousands of planets orbiting other stars, but we know of only planets, but we know of only one planet that hosts life, and that's the Earth. Most scientists think that life elsewhere in the universe is likely to exist, but so far there's no evidence that extraterrestrials exist or that they have visited us. However, we can search for signs of life on distant planets, and we are even using radio telescopes to look for messages sent to us by extraterrestrial civilizations. In this talk, Tim discusses the latest science behind the search for alien life. And that pretty much sums it up. I could go into further detail, like he talks about how big space is, and it'll make you feel very, very small, especially the whole, it takes 8 minutes for light to get to the Earth from the sun. That boggles the mind. It feels a lot closer than that for some reason. I don't know. He talks about the habitable planets that we have discovered so far. There's over 1,000, like that description said. Not too long ago, there was none. So that's a pretty good, we're doing pretty well.
We are.
Yeah. If a species were to explore the galaxy, he talked about this interesting way of going about it. It would still take like 100 million years, but it's pretty ingenious. You launch a probe, and then along the way, the probe collects material to make other probes. And then that probe makes a probe. And then the probe that made makes another probe, and so on and so on and so on. And eventually they all kind of connect interconnectedly, and they share data, and that's how they discover the universe. I thought that was pretty profound, pretty cool way of going about that.
Absolutely.
He also talks about all the radio telescopes throughout the Earth, like Arecibo. What other ones? He talked about one on the East Coast. And then there's a new one, not the one in China, but there's a new one that they're making in South Africa called Square Kilometer Array, which is going to be this series of telescopes, and I'm guessing by the name, in a square kilometer, right? All connected.
Sure.
And they're going to be able to see more or pick up more of what's being broadcast out in the universe than any other system so far. Like more than the big telescope they just opened in China, more than Arecibo, more than any other place, this one facility in South Africa is going to like dwarf all of those, which is I thought was kind of cool. I also learned that the first signal, which they eventually figured out was from a pulsar, was in 1967. They called it Little Green Man 1. I thought that was cute. So yeah, it's a neat little TEDx talk. It's not like a TED talk. It's not like a super professionally done, but it's still within that system. So it's the same format. It's just as interesting as you would find, Elon Musk talking at a straight up TED talk. So that's my recommendation. Again, it's free on YouTube. You can watch it there. We'll put the link in the show notes. Where Are All the Aliens? A TEDx talk by Tim O'Brien. And I'm going to give it 3.5 out of 5 flying saucers.
Nice.
All right, Brad, let's bring up the rear. What do you got?
Ha-ha! Sorry. I saw a little short film. And if I could find my notes on it, that would be great. Here they are. It was called Space Monster, and it was a sci-fi short movie, and it was directed by Andrea Rica. It's maybe 5-6 minutes long. The interesting thing about this is the director is a female. She's written, directed, and stars in this. Basically, it's a what you'd call a zero-budget film. There was no money put into it. There were no investors. It's just the short film that she put together. She states that it was kind of an homage to 50s sci-fi movies, and she's not wrong. Let's see. The interesting thing about it is it looks like she did green screen work for herself, and she the monster, the alien monster, is entirely CG. And she did all the modeling work for it and the animation. And I'm guessing it probably took her quite a bit of time to do. Now, it's not just her versus the monster, like hand to hand. There's actually a scene where she's driving away to escape the monster, but it follows her. And I don't want to give away the ending, but actually it got some good reviews at some different shows like the Fright Film Fest, Shriek Fest, Space Monster Magazine gave it a thumbs up. Well, I don't know how many thumbs were available on that one. But
Hold on. A Space Monster Magazine?
Yes.
There's a magazine called Space Monster.
It would appear so.
Why have I not heard of this?
Find out, Dave.
I'm going to.
Spacemonstersmag.wordpress.com.
Oh. Okay. That makes sense.
Yes. You can order back issues from amazon.co.uk. So they are physical things that you can hold in your hot little hands if you so desire. We'll have a link in the show notes. It was a very interesting, it seemed like a first effort in this type of film for the actress director. My base criticism for it is that acting wise, it didn't seem like she was frightened enough of the danger that she was in. I didn't feel like that part was projected enough. But other than that, everything else was, it was a great first run for a zero dollar type production. So I would give it, I'd give it 3 stars. I think it's worth looking at. And, you know, maybe if you're a aspiring sci-fi director, writer, filmographer, cinematographer, whatever, this might give you some ideas and, you know, kind of give you the encouragement that you need to do that thing that you've always wanted to do. So,
okay,
there you go.
Back up a little bit. What was your rating?
3 stars.
Sorry,
3 saucers.
Yeah, you got that right.
Yeah.
Sorry.
See what you started, Vanessa? Oh, yep. Vanessa. All right.
Moids.
Moids. All right, so in review, our picks this week, Space Monster, a sci-fi short film. We had my TEDx talk by Tim O'Brien, and Vanessa had Star-Lord, not the Star-Lord from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, don't get excited.
Please subscribe to this Galactic Network podcast by going to gncast.com/subscribe. Or search iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or anywhere podcasts are offered.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of The Alien Invasion, a Galactic Network podcast. We'd like to thank Eduard von Dürrenberg, a composer from Germany, for providing the new closing music called Be Water. Learn more about him and his music at thecaravel.net. That's The Caravel, thecaravel.net. And thanks for joining us. Until next time, final thoughts. Brad, you're up first.
I can't wait to watch The Flash. We're going to watch it in just a little bit.
And I'm going to watch Legends of Tomorrow.
Sadly, we'll have to wait until tomorrow to watch
that. Yeah, because you guys are on the whole day after because you're cord cutters.
Yes, we're using the CW app.
Okay, Vanessa, what's your final thought?
So is that the correct way to say the composer's name? I was wondering if we ever found out.
He said we were fine. Yeah, he said that it sounded fine. So And he thanked, okay. and he thanked us for mentioning his name and playing his song. And thank you, Retwad. We appreciate it.
Yay!
All right. Have a great week, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.
Okay, bye.
What? You guys aren't going to do the whole bye together thing that you always do.
Bye.
Wait. 1, 2, 3.
Bye.
This has been a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's gncasts.com.